Walt Podcast. Make the most of your Walt Disney World vacation.
The top six legacy impacts of Bob Iger. Hi, I'm Herb Leibacher, and welcome to episode number 63 of the World of Walt Podcast. Make the most of your Walt Disney World vacation for the week of March 13th, 2016. This is the podcast for Walt Disney World fans. Whether you're planning your next trip or just enjoy reliving a little bit of Disney magic. Today's podcast is sponsored by Ear to Their Travel. If you're planning a trip to anywhere that Disney is, give Phil at Ear to Their Travel a call. Phil is a former Disney cast member who really knows how Disney works. He can help you plan your next trip at no extra cost to you while making sure you get the best deal. You can reach Phil at eartotheirtravel.com. Since its founding in 1923, the Walt Disney Company has had a grand total of six chief executive officers, or CEOs. It actually started way back with Roy O. Disney, who was Walt's brother, who became the first CEO in 1929. During that time, Walt actually had the title of president. So Roy was the CEO until Walt's death in 66, when Roy took over the title of both the president and the CEO until 71, when Roy passed. There had been a few others, and then in more recent history, Michael Eisner was the CEO from 1984 to 2005, but since then, Bob Iger has been the CEO of the Walt Disney Company. Mr. Iger is expected to retire in 2018, so it may be just a little premature to assess his legacy, but we're going to do it anyway. Today, we're going to take a look at the top six legacy impacts of Bob Iger. And to help me explore this topic, I'd like to welcome a former Disney cast member, a Run Disney Dopey Challenge finisher, a Disney travel agent, and a guy who can tell you where to get a milkshake with unlimited refills at Walt Disney World, Phil Gramlich. Phil, welcome to the show.
Hey, Herb. Thank you so much for having me. It's weird doing this one over the phone and not doing it live. I really enjoyed doing the last one live with the monorail going overhead and all that. That was really a cool experience.
Me too. It is nice when we can meet in person in a spot in the parks. I enjoy that.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I'm sure inquiring minds want to know, where can you get a milkshake with unlimited refills?
And that's exactly what I was going to say. I'm sorry for cutting you off there. So the Whispering Canyon Cafe at Disney's Wilderness Lodge is where you can get those milkshakes. I've never even tried it because I'm kind of a wimp when it comes to sweets. But a friend of ours, we went with one night, and he finished three full milkshakes. And that's the most I've seen done. I mean, they're not little milkshakes. They're huge.
Yeah. I would think you just skip the meal and order the milkshake and just fill up.
He actually ate appetizers and dinner as well. And he's not a big guy by any means. So he made me a little nervous walking out of there, but he was okay afterward.
You thought he may explode or something like that?
Yeah. You know, they say that if you drink too much dairy, you never know what's going to happen to you.
All right. Well, that's a good tip to know. And before we get into the topic for today, I've got a warm-up question for you. And the warm-up question today is, what is your favorite thing about Splash Mountain?
So there's a couple things. I'm going to say one, but can I have one honorable mention as well?
We'll make an exception for you.
Sure. Okay. All right. So my favorite thing is the music. I think there's – I don't know if there's another attraction in all of Walt Disney World that has – like the variety of music, and it's just really cool songs that get stuck in your head, and you think about them the rest of your trip. I love like Zippity Doodah and Laughing Place, and all like the songs are just fantastic. That's my favorite part about it. Mm-hmm. But my honorable mention, I would say, is the little Imagineering secret with the it's sort of gopher that pops out of the ceiling right before the big lift hill and yells FSU for the the Imagineer who designed that part of the attraction went to Florida State, and he pops out right before you go up the lift hill, and he says, I'm not going to try to imitate him, but in a high-pitched, squeaky voice, he says FSU, and I think that's really a fun thing to look for when you're on a ride.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I will have to watch out the next time I go.
See, I'm teaching you something, Herb.
You are. I always learn something when I talk to you.
Yeah, right.
I think mine piggybacks on yours. Probably my favorite thing about it is the final scene with the Zippity Doodah song and the big paddle wheel boat and all the animatronics. That scene is just quintessential Disney to me. I mean, it's a happy ending, lots going on, and it really is enhanced by the music, just like you say.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what's funny is usually I miss the first half of that because I'm wringing out my T-shirt and you know me, I don't have much hair on top, so I'm, you know, the water's usually dripping down my face at that point. But yeah, I agree. That's a really cool part of the attraction too.
Yeah, it is. Well, good. So let's dive into the topic for today: top six legacy impacts of Bob Iger. And as always, Phil is my guest. Over to you for number one.
All right, so I definitely had a theme that you guys will pick up on my answers for this. So my first legacy impact of Bob Iger takes us to the Magic Kingdom and its new Fantasyland. The whole project was completely under his jurisdiction, I guess you could say. And it was so well done. And I know people complain about it's not very large, and they didn't really have a whole lot of land to work with to start, you know, to get that whole thing started. But it was so well done. The way they themed everything. There's new castles. I mean, you have the castle on the Under the Sea. You have the castle at the Be Our Guest restaurant. The whole storybook circus land is just really, really neat, especially at night with the double Dumbos. I really like the attention to detail and even little things like throwaways. When you're walking through Storybook Circus and you look at the ground and you see the animal footprints in the concrete, or you see the peanut shells, and just little tiny things that Disney doesn't need to do, but they did. And they did all that under Bob Iger. I thought that was just a really, really neat addition to Magic Kingdom. And it was needed. I mean, I thought Toontown kind of outlived what it was supposed to be. And they needed something new. They needed something fresh. And I think that was the perfect thing to put in at that part of the park.
Great points. I think you're right about Toontown. I think it was supposed to be around for a year or two. And it was, what, 10 or 15 years, maybe longer. Yeah, it lasted a long time.
It did, yeah.
Yeah. And I do agree that they really hit it out of the park when it comes to the details that were built into New Fantasyland. Like you say, from the impressions in the concrete to even the design of the restroom over in Storybook Circus, and it matches up with the train theme, the special effects in the Enchanted Tales with Belle. I think there were so many things that were so well done in New Fantasyland. They really just hit it out of the park.
Yeah, they really did. And I didn't even mention. I forgot to mention that. I mean, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. We didn't, you know, the biggest part of that whole land, which again, people complain and they say it's too short. I think it's just a great attraction. I think it's the best roller coaster they built in a really long time. Well, it's probably the only one they built in a really long time, except for Everest. But now everything's great. And I love Gaston's Tavern too. When you walk in with it's just like you walked into the movie, stepped right into Beauty and the Beast with that, even though it's not a tavern per se. It's just it did a great job. The detail's outrageous. Just a really, really neat way to spend some time in a park.
Yeah, I agree. I guess we could go on and on. So Be Our Guest is another thing where they just knocked it out of the park. Kind of funny to say that, but I just think they did a super good job.
Yeah, they did. And I just actually had dinner there for the first time. We had done lunch, my wife and my kids and I, and then we did dinner over Marathon Weekend this year. And I was blown away. The food was just fantastic. I had the best steak I've ever had in Walt Disney World while we were there. The appetizer, we got a meat and cheese plate, was excellent. And yeah, just walking in there, the ambiance, the rooms, everything is just perfect. It's such a cool addition to Magic Kingdom. They did a really, really great job. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if you have Bob Iger to thank, but that definitely is going to be a part of his legacy.
Yeah. I completely agree. All right, good one. Number one, New Fantasyland. So number two, back over to me. I think that one of the biggest things that Bob Iger is going to be remembered for is buying other companies. So going back to Pixar in 2006 and then Marvel in 2009, Lucas in 2012, Mr. Iger has been willing to open up the corporate coffers and spend money to buy other companies, and I think in very successful ways. So whenever you'd bring two companies together, it's a risk. It's hard to know if the cultures are going to match. Are you going to destroy the thing about this acquired company that really made it good by folding it into your bigger company? And I think Disney has done an amazing job and has a tremendous track record in all of these acquisitions. And those are the big ones that everyone remembers, but there have been a lot of others as well, which maybe we'll know more about them later on. Maybe they'll come to fruition. So in 2014, they spent $500 million on a company called Maker Studios, which makes videos for YouTube channels. And I think they've just done a really good job in acquiring companies and making them successful as part of the Disney family. Now, not all of it has been successful. Back in 2010, they bought a company called Tapalus, which was a video game company, which they ended up shutting down in 2014. So it's not a perfect track record, but it is an extremely good track record of some very big names that continue to be successful and contribute to Disney in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about all those too. And I didn't know about the video game company and doing, you know, my tremendous amount of research that I do for podcasts and for blogs. I didn't actually come across that one. So you taught me something. But I read a little story about how Bob Iger why he wanted to purchase Pixar. And it was something, because their characters weren't in the Hong Kong Disneyland opening, and Disney's characters weren't in the opening show. It was, they're newer characters. It was more Pixar characters. And he thought, man, I really need to do something like this. I need to, you know, make some money, off of Pixar, and ended up buying it. And it was just a really cool story to read about how that worked out. I mean, he bought Pixar early on, his first, I think, couple of weeks as the CEO. Then, you know, I read an interesting thing. When Walt Disney World released their annual earnings, they have Bob Iger's salary listed at $2.5 million. And I thought, man, that sounds really, really low to me. Hmm. So I looked it up, looked a little bit into it. And that was his, that's what they reported. But then it didn't include like his pension, his stocks, all that. So his actual salary in 2015 was a lot closer to $44.9 million. Wow. So, yeah, it wasn't that 2.5 that it was, you know, that they were saying originally. But, yeah, I mean, just it's crazy to think about. It's such a money-making machine. And he's done a great job bringing companies in that will just make them more money.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I heard a similar story about his thinking of acquiring Pixar. And so hard to know how much of these stories are true, but supposedly there was a conversation between Mr. Iger and Michael Eisner, where Eisner said, we just need to fix Disney animation. And Bob Iger said, well, Mr. Eisner, you haven't been able to do it. How am I supposed to do it? That was a time where things were pretty low for Disney animation. Yeah. And Pixar was really killing it. They were doing a great job. And so I think that acquisition was really important, first off, to give Disney characters, but then really to inject some new life into the Disney animation, which we're seeing a lot of the fruition of that now in some of the amazing work that Disney animation itself is generating, like Frozen being the latest example. And I think a lot of that is because the talent that came along in Pixar, which the company did a good job of really utilizing as opposed to crushing, which is great.
Yeah, you're right. And they didn't see Frozen coming. That was a funny part too, right? Nobody, they just said, I remember seeing the preview for that movie and being like, I don't know. It looks decent. Like the first trailer with Olaf and Sven. And I was like, I guess we'll take my kids. But yeah, what a moneymaker that was. It's crazy how that phenomenon is still going strong. There's so many people that are going to tell you that they're over it and they're done with it. But as a father of two little girls, it's not going anywhere.
I think it's going to be around for a long time.
I think you're right. It is.
Yep. All right. That was number two, buying companies. So number three, Phil, back over to you.
All right. So for me, again, we're sticking with, I had a kind of a theme going. So I'm heading over to Disney's Animal Kingdom. And it's the reinvention kind of Disney's Animal Kingdom as a nighttime park. It hasn't been, I mean, I worked there on the college program in 1998, showing my age a little bit, and it closed at 5 every day. So it was far, far, far from a nighttime park at that point. But I think Disney realized that they needed to inject a little life into that park at night, especially with what Universal's doing down the road with the Harry Potter expansions, and now looks like they're going to be building even more parks there. So they decided they're going to do the whole World of Pandora land, which I'm really excited about. I think it's just looking at the concepts, and now we were there recently, and I got to see the floating mountains in person, and it's impressive. Like, I know you can't see them really well, but you get a couple like views through the trees here and there, and it looks like it's going to be amazing. It's going to be a really cool addition to Animal Kingdom, so I'm excited about that. And then, and also what else got me excited about that was I was out at D23 Expo in Anaheim in August, and I got to see the mock-up of what the land will look like, and it's huge. I couldn't believe how big it is. I couldn't believe what they're really putting into it. So it's that, and then they're bringing in the Rivers of Light show, which looks just awesome. It's almost like World of Color Light, I think, where it's going to be a lot of projection and water, projections on water. And it's going to be a really, really neat show at night for Animal Kingdom. It's going to inject a whole lot of life into that park. And then they have the nighttime safari coming as well with the addition of the hyenas and the African wild dogs on Kilimanjaro Safari. So it's just going to be a really cool park to go to at night. I mean, during the day, of course, it's always been good. But I think, they saw, Bob Iger even saw what the parks needed, what Animal Kingdom needed. And they're really doing a great job, I think. I can't wait to walk through when it's finally finished.
Yeah, me too. I'm very much looking forward to these things. And while I'm not the biggest fan of Avatar, I think that Disney's going to do some very interesting things in attractions and maybe other things too, shops, restaurants, when it comes to bringing Pandora to life. And you really hit on the big items, but I think we're getting a lot of other little items that are needed to support an expansion of the park. So we've seen some refurbishments like a Flame Tree Barbecue. We've seen expansions of some of the gift shops on the way into the park. We're seeing a new restaurant coming, which is sort of on that old pathway to Camp Minnie Mickey, which will now be Pandora. So we're getting a lot of headliners, and we're getting a lot of, so to speak, backfill, where all these people are going to need places to shop and places to eat. And so that park is really growing in a lot of ways.
And don't forget Starbucks. They put a Starbucks in there too.
Of course. Starbucks. Yes.
don't be afraid to mention the Starbucks. Now, they really did though. The little things, you're right. I just, even little, like the differences in what the food carts are selling now, these little food carts that are kind of throwaways that you don't plan your day around, have just a really cool, different variety of food that you can eat. And I got a lobster mac and cheese from a food cart when I was there last month. It was great. And I was walking by, I saw it. I figured I had just run a half marathon that day, and I'm like, hey, I'm going to get a lobster mac and cheese. Of course I am. So yeah, they've done a really good job with the park, and I'm excited for what's to come.
Yeah, me too. I think Animal Kingdom is just going to be at a whole different level. So
yeah, I agree.
Good one. Okay, that was number three. So number four, back over to me. This is somewhat similar to buying companies, or maybe goes hand in hand. I think one of the things that Mr. Iger is going to be remembered for is his ability to mend fences. So as Michael Eisner exited the company, there was a lot of animosity with a lot of folks. And in fact, Walt Disney's nephew, Roy E. Disney, was part of the move, along with a guy named Stanley Gold, to get rid of Eisner. And when Iger came in, he started to reach out to these people who created a lot of turmoil within the company and caused Eisner's ouster, and said, I'm willing to talk to you, and I'm willing to meet you more than halfway, and let's discuss what your concerns are, and let's do something about them. I think he's done a good job of mending fences. Another prime example was tying into the acquisition of Pixar. So Steve Jobs, who more or less owned Pixar at the time, and Michael Eisner did not see eye to eye, and with the two of them at the helms of those two companies, there was no shot that those two companies, one was going to acquire the other. Disney just didn't have a chance to acquire Pixar. But when Eisner was out and Iger was in, Iger was able to reach out to Steve Jobs and say, you know, we need this, we need what you have, and I'm willing to work with you to make it happen. And he did. And in a result, Iger ended up spending $7 billion to buy Pixar, made Steve Jobs the biggest investor in the Walt Disney Company, and his widow is now the same. So Iger has done a really good job of reaching out to people and building bridges. And I think he's not only done that from a people perspective, but also from a technology perspective. So it's been said that Mr. Iger tells his direct reports to spend 60% of their time thinking about technology, which is pretty amazing. When you think about Disney, you think about movies and theme parks. But he's thinking ahead and building bridges to where he needs to go, which is enabling things with technology. So I think he has really been one who's been able to mend fences and build bridges to the directions where the company needs to go.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about the technology too. It is the jumps that and the leaps and bounds that Disney's made as far as technology goes in the last 15 years is amazing. As technology has grown, Disney has grown right along with it. I mean, with the invention of the magic bands and things like that, They've really embraced it, and it's obvious that somebody who's a higher up is is doing that and is paying attention to what people want. And while it was kind of people were nervous about that kind of thing, the magic bands, everything tied to your wrist when you walk into the park, but I think it's really worked out. And I read actually about this Steve Jobs and Bob Iger phone call. And it was funny reading it that he called him and, Iger called Steve Jobs and said, he was so nervous to ask him to even approach him about buying Pixar. And then when he finally got the courage to ask him, Steve Jobs was like, you know what, that's not really a crazy idea. And they ended up getting along and ended up making the deal. And really, who's not better for it? Disney's got all these great characters, all these great properties in the parks. And Steve Jobs, unfortunately passed away, but became an even richer man in the process.
Yeah, you're right. And it's interesting that sort of cross-pollination on the technology front. So you mentioned Magic Bands, which I think is one of the technology investments that Disney made that's front and center. But they also made some big changes back in the day to get Disney movies on Apple iTunes, which was very groundbreaking at the time. And I would think that the involvement Steve Jobs had in the company as a director and as a significant owner of Disney probably pushed all of that along.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're right about that.
Good. All right, number four, mending fences. Number five, Phil, back over to you.
Okay, so that's where I am. Okay. So again, same theme. I didn't change a lot for this podcast, but I really love what they did over at Disney's California Adventure. My wife and I went there on our honeymoon in 2008, before the renovation, before the rebuilding of the park, basically. And we've liked it. I mean, we were there for 3 days and then we went off to Hawaii. And I had never been to Disneyland before, so it was a really big deal for me, being a huge Disney nerd that I am and being a big Walt Disney himself fan that I am. But we spent probably 75% of our time in Disneyland on that trip, in Disneyland Park itself, because just it was a better park. And it was, I don't want to say California Adventure was a bad park. It was fun and the attractions were good. It just was, I think it just missed it. The theming missed, the making a park about California for locals in California kind of missed it. It just didn't hit with the Disney fans. And then, Bob Iger and his team come in and they said, we got to fix this, we got to turn it around. And what they've done with that park is remarkable. It's honestly, in my top three favorite parks behind Disneyland and Magic Kingdom. Just they've done such a good job. And the attractions really have, some have changed, but so many of them are still the same. It's just the re-theming of the areas, the addition of Buena Vista Street. Cars Land is just amazing. It's, I think, in my opinion, the best land Disney's built, maybe ever, the most immersive. And it's just an amazing, amazing park. And at night, everything comes to life with World of Color. And, you know, walking up and down Buena Vista Street with the red car trolley passing by. And just even like the little things, they changed the Condor Flats area over by, it used to be like an airfield theme, and they changed that to kind of to blend in with the Grizzly Peak part of the park. And it's just, everything just works perfectly. And when I found myself out there for a solo trip for D23 in August, I stayed in that park a lot more than I thought I would, because I just really, really enjoyed it. And I love what they've done with it. And if you haven't seen it, it's really something that you have to go see. It, don't just go for Disneyland Park anymore. Go for California Adventure. It's just a really, really cool experience.
You know, I haven't had the opportunity to go out and check out Disney's California Adventure since the renovation, but you talked about the theme and your items, and I think part of the theme is the willingness to invest. So all of these areas, whether it's turning Disney's Animal Kingdom into a nighttime park, or New Fantasyland, or Disney's California Adventure, they spent a lot of money. And anytime a company decides to spend a lot of money, there's a lot of questioning and a lot of consideration. They need to make sure that they're using that money well. And I think Mr. Iger was willing to spend a lot of money and make sure that it was spent well. And I think that comes through in all of the points that you mentioned.
Yeah, they're not afraid to spend money anymore, are they? It seemed like for a while after the Disney decade, they were a little afraid to add these huge, big, you know, glamorous things. But
yeah,
they're definitely not now. They're doing everything pretty much top notch, and it shows. I mean, you know, I think it's funny. We're at a time when Universal is upping their prices to match Disney's. And I used to work at Universal as well. I love the parks there too, but I just don't think it's not on the same level. And it's weird to see them have the same prices as Disney has now. I just don't think, you know, I don't want to go off on a tangent between Universal and Disney, but two parks versus four, the amount of attractions that you get, you know, Disney's just put it over the top lately. And I think Universal's going to try to keep up, but I just don't think they can. Hmm. It's the number of parks, the number of resorts, the size of, you know, compared to Universal's just, they can't keep up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. It will be interesting to see how things unfold in the next year, and so how that competition pushes both parks and both brands to do their best, which is probably good for all of us.
It is, yeah. We're going to just get better stuff.
Yep, good. All right, number five was the renovation of Disney's California Adventure. So last one, number six, is over to me. So as Disney fans, we have fond memories of what Disney has done for us and what they are doing, and we love the music and the parks and the merchandise, and we have an emotional connection. But in the end, Disney is a business, and Mr. Iger has the job of returning profits back to the people who choose to invest their money in the Walt Disney Company stock. So ultimately, the way Wall Street is going to evaluate Mr. Iger is by whether or not he makes money. And he has really done a great job of making money. And I know some people think about the billions that we're going to talk about and say, oh, that's just wrong. And I see it in the completely opposite way. I think it's good for all of us. It's good for the people who've invested their money in the company. And it's good for us as fans when Disney makes a lot of money, because it means that they will continue to make these big investments like they have. And I think the biggest number comes down to the company's net income. So rewind back to 2005 when Mr. Iger took over. That was the time when Expedition Everest came out and Disney came out with Chicken Little. So it's been a while. So 2006, the company made $3.3 billion in net income. Now that's a lot of money. But last year, 2015, the company made $8.3 billion. So a $5 billion jump in 9 years. That is huge. And so I think that's good for all of us. It shows that Mr. Iger knows what he's doing as an executive, and he is doing his job in making sure the company makes money for its investors. And then as a bonus, all of us as fans get to continue to enjoy more and more that the company can do.
Yeah, that number actually staggers me because I didn't realize it was that much. But yeah, you're right. And his job when they sign, you know, when he signs on isn't to, you know, appease everyone and make everyone happy. It's to make the company money. It's a business. And, you know, that's what they're there for. And it's why it's funny when people complain, and I'm one of them, trust me, about things going away and things changing in the parks and things that, you know, you don't like. Listen, Disney's always going to be about making money first. Unfortunately, that's just the way it works. And yeah, he's done an amazing job. It's from, and I don't want it to sound like I think Michael Eisner did a poor job, because he really, especially at the beginning and the middle of his tenure there, he really just did amazing things for the company. But yeah, you think about the jump that they made in just that short amount of time. It's astounding.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, I agree. And you talked about the $40 million that he makes. And some people hear that and think, wow, how can any human being be worth $40 million a year? But when you think that he's brought in billions more in profit, anyone who's investing in a business says, well, shoot, I'll pay $40 million a year to get an extra $5 billion over the next decade. I mean, that's a no-brainer. And it's not all Mr. Iger, of course. I mean, there are thousands of people who are working hard to make sure that the Disney company succeeds as a business. But the buck stops with him, and he gets rewarded when he does a good job. And from a financial perspective, and I think from all of these other perspectives, he really has done a bang-up job.
Yeah, and we don't have to pay him that money. I'll pay for an overpriced churro or Dole Whip in the park just to make sure he gets his money. As long as he keeps putting new rides and new shows and bringing, you know, new experiences for me and my family, I'm happy with it.
I agree. And I think that is a great way to cap a conversation. You know, he's done a good job, which means that we can look forward to more in the future.
Yeah, I completely agree. Totally agree.
All right, the top six legacy impacts of Bob Iger. Number one, New Fantasyland. Number two, buying companies. Number three, the reimagination of Disney's Animal Kingdom. Number four, mending fences. Number five, the renovation of Disney's California Adventure. And number six, a bang-up financial performance. Phil, as always, thanks for joining me. And if folks are interested in learning more about what you're up to, how can they do that?
So you can come over to my website. It's eartothertravel.com. I have a blog there that has a lot of silly, fun articles that I write. All my contact information, my social media stuff, everything's on there. You could also request a free quote for your next Disney trip. So yeah, eartothertravel.com is where you can find me.
And Phil, as my preferred travel provider for the World of Walt site, I'm just pleased that I get an opportunity to work with you. I see you in action helping people plan their vacations all the time. Your heart and your soul is in it. You do a good job for folks. I've heard that time and time again. So if anyone is interested in getting some help planning their trip at no extra cost, be sure to give Phil a call.
Awesome. Thank you, Herb. Thanks for saying that.
You bet, Phil. And thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. It was fun. We'll have to do it again in person in April. I'll be down for the Dark Side half marathon. So have to do it maybe at Animal Kingdom Lodge this time.
That's a deal. And I see a milkshake in my future, I think.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely.
Today we head out to Hi Ho, Hi Ho, and yes, we have made it through the list of the top six legacy impacts of Bob Iger, but our conversation is not over. I would love to hear what you think about our list. Do you have a different idea or something you'd like to add? You can do that by visiting the show notes page at worldofwalt.com/63. It's a page that works really nicely on smartphones, tablets, and desktops. Leave your comments in the comments section and check out what other people are thinking as well. I'd like to thank everyone who's been in touch with me, and I'd love to hear from you too. You can send me an email, info@worldofwalt.com. Leave a voicemail message at 407-391-5023. Leave an online voicemail message at worldofwalt.com/voicemail, or check me out on social media, facebook.com/worldofwalt and pinterest.com/worldofwalt. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I would appreciate it if you would spread the word. Tell your friends and family about it. So to wrap up for today, I would like to give you a heartfelt thank you for spending some of your time with me. I'd also like to thank everyone who visits the worldofwalt.com site, where you can read interesting Disney articles and chat with other folks in the forums and the comments sections. By listening here and by visiting the site, you allow me to share the fun of Disney with you. And that is very cool. Thank you so much for being a part of it. So until next time, my friend, may God bless you.
So there's a great big beautiful tomorrow, shining at the end of every day. There's a great big beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.